Good afternoon, everybody, or good evening, or good morning. Listen to the fact. This Sports Betting Tips with Sheridan, episode number 43. And we got a big game tonight in Indiana, the place they used to call Conseco Fieldhouse. It's now Bankers Life Fieldhouse. The Indiana Pacers, the best team nobody talks about, are playing the Philadelphia 76ers, the best team people love to talk about. Everything about the Sixers is talked about ad nauseum. Nothing about the Pacers is talked about all that much, but that's why we've brought on Jay Michael from the Indianapolis Star, the beat writer for the oldest paper in Indianapolis and the best paper in Indianapolis. There used to be two, now there's one, but the Indy Star still does it well. Jay Michael, welcome to the program. I appreciate you coming on, and let's get right at it. We got a big game tonight for Eastern Conference seeding purposes, but also a kind of a litmus test game for both teams, because over the years the Indiana Pacers have certainly had the Philadelphia 76ers number. They're 1-1 against each other this season, but tonight's game is going to give one of these teams a 2-1 lead in the season series, and when tiebreaker time comes, these games are actually important, even though they're taking place in the middle of January. So your thoughts going into tonight's game about who's playing, who's not playing, and what you expect to see from both teams?
I expect it to be a defensive game, actually. It was 194 when they first played here in Indianapolis, and I think the Pacers are a better defensive team now than they were then. And quite frankly, Philadelphia is a team that switches a lot, and the Pacers have had difficulty dealing with teams that switch in terms of getting their offense going. So I see this as being a game that's going to be real defensive-oriented. Now you have Jimmy Butler, who's playing in this game. He wasn't with the Sixers the first time they met. He was held out of the game when he finally joined the Sixers when the Pacers beat them in Philadelphia. Butler didn't play in that game either. So really, I guess he's an X factor in terms of how these teams are going to match up with each other. So I expect to see him on Victor Oladipo. He'll probably give Oladipo a tough night like he did when Oladipo saw him when the Pacers went to Minnesota. So I think he's going to probably keep Oladipo's numbers in check, and you're not going to see a 36-point performance like Oladipo had the first game against Philadelphia. But I think it's going to lay the groundwork for a game that's defensive-oriented, where the offense, at least on the side of the Pacers, in order for them to win, it's going to have to be spread out where you're going to have 6, 7, 8 guys in double figures.
Yeah, and it's a team that didn't do a lot of changing in the off season. They lost Lance Stephenson, but they didn't bring in all that many different players. And so continuity in basketball goes a long way. How much of an advantage do you see that being for the Pacers as the season plays out and as we move toward playoff time? This is a group that knows each other from last season, and that's got to count for something, no?
I think it does count for something, especially, to me, Bojan Bogdanović is having the best season of his career. You could look at his three-point shooting. Everybody says he's a three-point shooter, which obviously is exceptional. But this season, he's been better at putting the ball on the floor, better at finishing on the move. He's starting to get better at looking for other people and creating rather than just looking for his own shot. That's been the biggest part of his game to come around. But I think as a result of that, they have been able to, that continuity, I think they relate to each other pretty well. And they're really honest with each other about what they're not doing well enough, what they need to do more of. And I think Bogdanović has responded from what he's gotten from his teammates. I think the way Thad Young has responded has helped as well, the way Miles Turner has responded. They have a lot of pieces back, but most of these guys, if you look at this roster, it's kind of a tricky situation if you're not careful. If you don't have the right guys in your locker room, who's on an expiring deal? Tariq Evans, who's on a one-year deal. Thad Young's expiring. Bogdanović expiring. Darren Collison. So you could end up in a situation where a bunch of guys are just playing for their numbers to try to get a big contract in the offseason. So I think when you even add that layer on top of how they're sharing a basketball and playing in a team concept kind of speaks to the DNA of how they play. And, I think you got to give Kevin Pritchard credit for the way he's kind of constructed them and Nate McMillan for kind of getting them to buy in and not getting caught up into those agendas, because that actually was a huge priority before the first tip happened, that McMillan went to the team and told them, you know, none of this playing for your contract because you're going to be on the bench. So, and you see the results.
Yeah, and, you know, the results speak for themselves. You know, you look where the Pacers are in the Eastern Conference. They're 29-14. They're only two games behind the Bucks in the loss column, and they're one game behind the Raptors in the loss column. Nice record at home, 15-5. Not all that bad away, 14-9. But they've lost to some bad teams. And what's been kind of the common denominator, J. Michael, when the Pacers go up against a bad team and they can't get the job done?
Well, I mean, I think they've beaten most of the bad teams, actually. They lost to Cleveland. I think that loss to Cleveland was a huge stain on the season when they lost 92-91. Even though Larry Nance body slammed Victor Oladipo in the game when it put back. But I think the big thing with them is they've struggled against some bad teams. They've had to fight tooth and nail against the first time they met the Phoenix Suns. They struggled in the first two meetings with the Chicago Bulls, but they were able to beat them. I think they're able to pull it together against some of the bad teams and get them out of there eventually. I think when you look at where did they stack up against the elite teams is where the biggest question comes in, because they're 0-2 against Toronto. They're 1-1 against Milwaukee. They made up for that really bad loss in the second game of the season in Milwaukee. Obviously, they're 1-1 going into Philadelphia tonight. So I think really what's going to tell the tale of their season is how they match up against the top four or other five teams in the Eastern Conference, because, you know, they're 2-0 against the Wizards, a bad team. I think they've handled them well, even though at times they haven't necessarily looked that great. They've beaten bad teams, and you walked away saying, yeah, they beat them, but, man, they really had to go down to the wire to do it. That's the glass is half empty. The glass is half full is, but they were able to get out of there with a W. So, you know, I think this is going to kind of be the identity of that team, this team, that they can struggle against some bad teams but still win. The question is, can they look great and can they raise their level against better competition? And they did it mostly against Toronto for three quarters, but, you know, then they ended up losing. So it's I'm not sure. Can they be a top two seed, top three seed? I think it's possible, but I think right now most people are still pegging them at four or five.
Yeah, they're sort of an unknown commodity, but guys come on the show all the time and say, you know, people underestimate that team. They did have a seven-game winning streak, and then that was followed by a six-game winning streak, and now they've won three of their last four, the only loss coming to the at Boston, where they got blown out by 27 points. But the thing that strikes you when you look at the Pacers is who's their leading scorer on any given night. And on any given night, it could be anybody. It could be Thaddeus Young. It could be Victor Oladipo. It could be Domantas Sabonis. Bogdanovich. I mean, you name it. So they have a team that's going to hit you in a whole bunch of different ways. And just given the matchup on any given night, there's going to be one guy that's going to cause a matchup problem for the other team. Now, when you look at the Sixer game tonight, you mentioned the matchup of the centers and how Embiid has kind of had Miles Turner's number. Where do you see the matchup tonight favoring Indiana?
I think the biggest advantage you're going to have, they're going to try to put, if you go based on the previous two games, they try to get by with Embiid defending Thaddeus Young rather than having him defend Miles Turner, because Miles is going to try to spread him from the rim, beat him off the dribble, which he, you know, Miles Turner absolutely destroyed, for instance, Hassan Whiteside doing that earlier this year when they beat the Miami Heat. So they're going to try to get him on Thaddeus Young. Embiid is still slow getting up and down the court. So what the Pacers do is they're going to release, or they're going to have Thad Young, who's faster, basically try to beat him up the court to get easy buckets. That's what he was able to do in that last game in which they beat him. That's an advantage for them. So they're going to try to make what Philadelphia is trying to make an advantage for them, to use Thad's ability to get up and down the court quicker so they can get some cheap buckets and make Embiid work hard so he can fall apart like he did in the second half of that game because he was trying to chase him down. So I think that's one of the biggest matchups you have to watch too. If Thad can make that cross match for Philadelphia a liability for them.
And what about the point guard matchup with Darren Collison and Ben Simmons?
Yeah, well, you know, Collison's had kind of like an up and down season. In the last matchup when they played, I think Bogdanovich, they cross matched, put Bogdanovich there, and they moved Collison. I think they had Forkmaz. Who was the three who played in that game, and they had Collison cross matching to get him off Ben Simmons. So I don't think he's going to match up defensively one on one with Ben Simmons in this game. I would expect to see Bogdanovich in that situation, and you know, but if you talk about like how important Collison is, if Collison has a really bad game, regardless of who he's defending. Generally, that team has a tough time on the offensive end, especially, right? And, well, they have a tough time defensively, too, because it means he's pretty much not putting ball pressure on whoever has the ball up top. That's number one. Number two, offensively, he kind of withdraws. And it makes it easier for the defense to send his defender to help and double-team and dig against someone else. But if Collison is on the way he was in the previous game that they just won here against Phoenix, where he gave up the ball, he relocated to the opposite corner, got wide open threes, and knocked them down without hesitation. That Darren Collison actually makes this team, puts this team at another level offensively. So I think, you know, if he plays bad, it's going to probably be a knockdown, drag-out game. It probably is going to end up being an ugly game that the Pacers will have to win. But if he is a little bit more dynamic and assertive, their chances of winning, I think, increase exponentially.
Yeah, the over-under on this game is 224 points. If it's knocked down, drag out, I don't know if it's going to get that high, but the Pacers are – well, Pacers are favored by 4 points, which seems like about the right line for them playing at home. But rather than looking at the line on the game, J. Michael, I want to throw this line at you because every time I throw this at guys, they're like, what? What? Because right now the Indiana Pacers are 60-1 to win the NBA championship. 60-1. Okay. Now, wow. There's your wow. But when you start looking at the lines on other teams to win the NBA championship, especially out of the East, the lines are much shorter for the team. You know, the Bostons, the Philadelphias, and the Torontos. Why do you think Indiana's sitting there at 60-1?
I don't think a lot of people pay attention to them. I mean, I honestly believe. I think the Pacers are a better team, top to bottom, than Philadelphia. I mean, I believe that even after the first 2 months of the season, they only have Oladipo as their only star, and I guess the theory is. You have to have stars in order to win in the playoffs, which is true. You got to have, more than LeBron. You got to have Kyrie with them, right? You got to have more than Steph. You got to have Klay and guys with them, right, or Durant. So if you use that logic that going into a seven-game series that Oladipo is not going to be enough, I assume that's why they would be listed at 60-1. But I'm telling you, having Miles Turner, who I think is incredibly overlooked when it comes to his impact, they give up about an average of 118 points a game when Miles Turner doesn't play. He's missed, I think, 5 or 6 games this season. Defensively, they're just not the same team at all. When he plays, they hold teams to about 100 points a game. I mean, that is a huge difference with him on versus off the court. So you said the line tonight was 224 total points scored. Because Miles Turner's playing, I'm going to take the under on that because I just think – he allows all of these guys on the perimeter to play more aggressively because they know he's behind them to clean up the mess. And even forget, he leads the league in shot blocks or he has been most of the season. That's probably about 4 or 5 other shots a game in addition to the block that he changes or kickouts that he forces or turnovers that he makes guys throw passes because they don't want to all of a sudden try to attack him at the rim. And if they're up in the air, they think the basket's open, they see Miles Turner, and they make a terrible pass while in the air. Miles Turner has forced guys into, he forces like 3 or 4 of those plays a game in addition to his shot block. So I think he changes everything for them. As good as Thad Young is, and Thad Young is an excellent defensive guy, Thad Young's not 6'11 with the wingspan of Miles Turner. And so you put those two together down low, and then you have Oladipo, who likes to play passing lanes and really cause havoc up top. They're a really good defensive team. Scoring 112 or 120 points against them in a game is really difficult, and I find it hard to see. That's not going to happen often if Miles Turner is on the court. It just won't.
No, your host is going to have to take the under. My guest on yesterday gave me a pick, and I played a 17 parlay, and I had 6 wins and 1 push, and I won a bunch of money last night. So, and that was with a $25 bet. But just for point of comparison, the Celtics are sitting at 9-1. The Raptors right now are favored to win the East at 7-1. The sneaky good Brooklyn Nets are at 150-1, and I think they're one trade away from being a team that can actually get into the second round. And the Milwaukee Bucks are at 15-1. Looking at the MVP race, obviously with what James Harden is doing, I mean, went off against the Nets last night. What a great game, and really a signature win for the Nets in double OT to beat Houston down in Houston. Spencer Dinwiddie went nuts, but James Harden right now is the favorite to win the MVP, and Giannis is second. And way down at the bottom of the board is Victor Oladipo at 200-1. Victor Oladipo at 200-1. Has he got any shot of being the MVP in this league? You know, I have this conversation with people when we talk about Jokic, Nikola Jokic, who's 40-1 for a team that's exceeding all expectations in the West. But what about Oladipo at 200-1 to win MVP?
Not this year. I mean, you know, his number one, his efficiency and stuff is down all across the board. I think part of that is because other guys have emerged. So, you know, like the other night when they put up 131 points, I think it was, in beating Phoenix, Oladipo had 8, okay? They scored 131 points, and Oladipo scored 8. So you see a bunch of other guys doing other things, and Oladipo is filling up the stat sheet with rebounds. I think he's averaging a career-high in rebounds and assists and those sorts of things. But his efficiency, his shooting is kind of going down. Now, part of that is because, you know, he had a bruised right knee that caused him to miss 11 games this season. And I saw evidence of him in that last game during when there was a technical foul being shot by his team. And he ran down to the other side of the court, and he was clearly testing his right knee. So even though they say that there's nothing wrong with it, he's healthy, he can play, I just have questions of how healthy his right knee is that he's had. This is the second year in a row. You know, it's not structural, but, you know, let's face it, these guys do all this work in the summer. I spent a day and a half down in Miami with Oladipo when he was training this summer, and you see the kind of things that some of these guys do. He's working out a day after the season ended for him in Cleveland. He's going all out in the gym. And, you know, so I think a lot of these guys produce injuries, and I think that's the case with Oladipo. And that has also contributed this season to kind of causing his efficiency to dip, as well as obviously getting more attention from opposing defenses.
I'm going to run some individual player over-unders at you in a minute, J. Michael. But first, I want to take a chance to remind everybody that this show lives on GetMoreSports.com, and you can find it on Blog Talk Radio. You can find it on SoundCloud. You can find it all over the place. But we're sponsored by one of the best offshore sports gambling facilities there is. It's BetDSI.com out of San Jose, Costa Rica. And if you go to BetDSI.com and you deposit $1,000 U.S., if you're listening overseas, you got to go to betdsi.eu. But you use the bonus code BBALL1000, that's BBALL1000. They'll match your initial $1,000 deposit with another $1,000 deposit. Then you can go and make some fun bets like the under in tonight's game. But, J. Michael, here's some of the over-unders for individual players. Bogdanović, total points, 15.5. Oladipo, total points, 19.5. Jimmy Butler, total points, 18.5, which seems low. Joel Embiid is at 26.5, and Ben Simmons is at 16.5. Out of all those numbers I just gave you, which one jumps at you as, wait a minute, that don't seem right?
I would say Bogdanović. I would say Bogdanović is going to get well over 15.5. So, For the reason I just said when I was explaining why Oladipo's numbers are down. Bogdanovich is getting the weakest defenders. He's getting small defenders, and he's posting smaller guys up. And, you know, as I talked about how well he's been shooting and scoring, he's realized that, and he's not just settling for taking threes. You put a six-foot guy on him, he's going to post him up, and they're going to clear out that side and let him go to work. So I would say for tonight, Bogdanovich going over 15 is pretty much a done deal because he's going to have the shot opportunities to do it.
The host just clicked over on that one. Thank you. Some guys don't laugh at it. I did though. That's the true thing. I'm looking at the piece of schedule.
Go ahead, Jay Michael. By the way, am I gonna get some of this money?
Man, I make small bets. I bet $20. I bet twenty bucks a night, and I try to hit parlays. And every now and then one of them comes in. But I'm looking at the schedule after Philly tonight. You got a back to back. This is a four-game homestand. You got a back-to-back against Dallas and Charlotte Saturday and Sunday. Certainly two winnable games. Then the Raptors come in. That's another litmus test game. Then you're on the road at Memphis. Golden State comes into Indiana. That's always, you know, that's going to be a sellout. Then at Washington, at Orlando, at Miami, at New Orleans. To me, that's the kind of schedule that could push the Pacers into first place in the Eastern Conference. You know, look at those 8, 9, 10 games, they should probably go 8-2.
Yes.
And you're not going to see them at 60-1 if they're sitting in first place in the Eastern Conference. But when you look at the Pacers' schedule, they don't go on another long Western road trip until the middle of March, and then they finish up fairly easy. They finish up. Look at their last six games: Orlando, Detroit. Then Boston is a tough one. Brooklyn might be a tough one. And then at Atlanta. Gun to your head. Pacers going to win the Eastern Conference?
I don't know about – I put it this way. I wouldn't be surprised if we go into the last 2 weeks of the season and they're within earshot of getting the number one seed. I think Toronto's the best team in the East. I've felt that way hands down for like probably the last month. I think Kawhi and Danny Green have done fantastic things. But I think that the whole idea of them being at 4 or 5 all season, you know, the anticipation, that's where they're going to end up. I think they've been through the worst part. They went through the worst part of some of their schedule already. And you're looking at right now a team, I said right at the midseason point when they hit 41 games, I projected they would go about 11-5 based on what the opponents. And I was being really relatively conservative with 11-5. They go 11-5 going into the All-Star break. And if they do that, they pretty much only have to play 500 ball from that point anyway to break 50 wins. So, I mean, and they're not going to play 500 ball when you mention that schedule that you just talked about, especially towards the end. So now you're looking at a team that, best case scenario, you're looking at maybe, you know, a team that's, you know, 57-25 or, you know, 56-26 sort of. That's a top two seed. And so I think it's doable. I still think Toronto's gonna finish number one. But I'm not locked in on Milwaukee the way everybody else is. I think you said the odds of Milwaukee winning the title or something that you just said was what, 16-1 or something to that effect. I think they're good. I haven't really bought into that. I think over the long haul, the Pacers are going to be a better team than Philly, and they're going to be a better team than Milwaukee this season.
It's interesting. I've been in love with the Pacers since the summertime. I saw Jermaine O'Neal out at a Big Three event, and he said, he still kind of bleeds Indiana. He said, but keep an eye on Utah in the West, but don't discount this Pacer team because of the continuity that they have. Jay Michael, let's take a look at the West. Golden State, you know, another big win last night. They moved the game ahead of the Nuggets. They're tied in the loss column, but they've got two more in the win column. And then the standings go: Golden State, Denver, Oklahoma City, Portland, Houston, San Antonio, Clippers, and Jazz, with the Lakers in the nine, looking out on the outside looking in. Lakers going to make the playoffs this year?
Playoffs. I just don't think they'll necessarily get past, you know, look, LeBron changes everything when he's playing, but Yeah, I think ultimately, I go back to the cliche, you are what your record says you are. And considering that they made so many roster moves and shifts this season that even with – I think about this. I think about LeBron being gone and what they look like, right? I think about what the Pacers look like in relative to when Oladipo was out for 11 games. Really, he was out for 12 games because he only played 5 minutes in that game that he left against Atlanta. So if you include mm-hmm. that game where he really didn't play, they were 8-4 without him. Played pretty doggone well. And so I just don't think a team should be that much of an identity, a difference in identity when one guy has to leave the floor. So I think the Lakers can sneak in and, they'll be in the bottom tier. If they got anything higher than six, I would be a little bit surprised. But I'm just not sold on them. I know a lot of people are because of the star power that they have there. I'm just not as high on them probably as other people are.
Yeah, I keep telling people, don't worry about what they look like now. Take a look at what they look like after the trade deadline. And then judge them going forward from there. But LeBron's groin injury,
exactly.
I mean that's given Luke Walton a lot of leeway right now. And when he comes back, probably full strength after the All-Star break, just watch out. But put your Kevin Pritchard hat on for us, J. Michael. If you had to make one tweak to the roster, the Indiana Pacer roster, where would you look to make an upgrade?
I'd add another score if possible. I mean, the difficulty, of course, is, scores are hard to find. You're going to have to give up something to whether it's a draft pick or an asset that you currently have. I think they need another score because, like I said, Oladipo's having a little bit of a down year in terms of his efficiency. And as good as Bogdanovich has been, they bought in Doug McDermott to be the scorer, and he's been good at times. He's been very good. The other times that he's invisible on the court, and I think that's partly a product of the second unit not looking for him. Like, sometimes he'll break open, he'll come off of a curl open. He's got the space, and they're late throwing the ball to him. By the time he gets the ball, his defender's recovered. They're not as crisp. If that happens with a Golden State team and you give a shooter that kind of space, the ball is in his hand and it's already going towards the rim. The Pacers, that's where they're kind of weak at. So I think when they go in, that's when they go into those lulls offensively. That's why I think they need a scorer who they can give the ball to, who's not reliant on catch and shoot and who can create his own shot. So other than Oladipo, who can do that on the team? Tariq Evans. Tariq's been really up and down. Sometimes he's really good, like the other night against Phoenix. Then there's like two or three games where, he's kind of invisible or he's a turnover machine or he's too ball dominant. Ideally, Tariq Evans fills that role, so you don't need to do that. But if you don't think, if I'm Kevin Pritchard, that Tariq is going to be that guy for you going forward, I would try to find a shooter who can create for himself to add that other dimension when Oladipo's locked down or maybe his, depending on how serious his knee soreness is. I just think you need that one other guy who can boogie with the ball and get his shot to add that other dimension to the team, because I think they've filled just about every other they have every other need on the team filled. So that would be the next layer or the next level, a guy who can do that. But who that would be, I'm not sure, because like I said, you just don't get guys like that just on a 10-day contract, or you rarely get somebody that good on a buyout. But, if you could, obviously that's the route I would go.
No, but one guy whose name is out there because everybody's trying to pick off the low-hanging fruit is Bradley Beal from the Washington Wizards. Would you, if you're Kevin Pritchard, would you give up Victor Oladipo and a number one pick for Bradley Beal?
Oh, see, now that's a tough question. Probably I'd be tempted, but I don't know if I would do that. Because I think both of them are close in a lot of ways. So I think you're making mostly a lateral move. But I absolutely love Bradley Beal. So if you told me if there's a way you could get Bradley Beal and you could still keep Oladipo, would I do it, even though they're both two guards? Absolutely. I'm a huge Bradley Beal fan. From what I know about the Wizards from covering them for so long as I did, they're not gonna make any moves when it comes to Beal, because they've been in positions years before where they should have moved or could have moved or had to move somebody, and didn't move them because they like to just sit on there. They like to just sit on things and kind of run out the clock. So, and Ted Leonsis has actually just said this week that they're determined to make the playoffs. So if that's the case, I don't think there's any way he's going to let it go with Bradley Beal. But, hey, I love Beal. So, but I think with him and Oladipo, it's a lateral move at this point. But, you know, look, he's going to be on the market soon when his contract expires. So I'd be all in on him because I think he has another level, another ceiling that people don't even know about yet because he's been handicapped in that situation in D.C.
Yeah, and D.C.'s been trying to move Wall. They can't do that now with his injury. They did make a nice move picking up Trevor Ariza, but the results speak for themselves, and that's just an underachieving team. And if you were to do any other kind of trade to get up to Bradley Beal's number, you're talking about, you know, Thaddeus Young and Tyreek Evans, and then probably and then two number ones would get that trade done. But I don't see Washington doing that deal. As it stands, Indiana's only got $58 million in committed salary for next year. Listen to all these guys who are coming off the payroll. Thaddeus Young, Tyreek Evans, Bojan Bogdanovic, Darren Collison, Corey Joseph, Kyle O'Quinn. I mean, the list goes on and on, and they got money tied up in Miles Turner moving forward, but Sabonis is still on his rookie deal. So they're all in kind of on this season, and let's say this season flames out. You do a full makeover of the team, or you try to bring back some of the guys that are on expirings and bring them back at numbers that'll keep you under the tax.
You bring back some of the guys that expire. You're gonna bring back Bogdanovic. I think they should do everything they can to bring him back because he has exceeded. He's exceeded my expectations when he first signed here. He's played better defensively than I ever imagined him ever playing. I talked about his offensive versatility, and they really like him in the locker room. So I think you can never have too many guys who can score and can stretch the floor like him. So if you go by Indiana and their DNA, you know, this isn't an organization that feels like it could just completely tear up the entire roster and start from scratch because all of these free agents are going to come running to Indiana desperate to play in Indiana. They know they are not going to be in the running for the A-list sorts of guys. So if you're in the running for B-list sorts of guys and you have some pretty good ones already, and so, look, I would keep Bogdanovic. I'd probably keep Corey Joseph right now. Corey Joseph's been fantastic. And those would be the two guys I would – and actually, you know, probably even Thaddeus Young, just because defensively – you know, look, in today's NBA, you want to stretch four, and he's not really a stretch four. But, my God, he can switch out onto smaller guys. He can hold his own at least for small periods against really big guys and do a good job defensively. He's kind of like a utility knife that he could just do so much. And I think guys like that are really valuable. I guess the question when it comes to all of them is what's their number going to be? You know, what's their number going to be in the market? And if I could keep Bogdanovic, Young, and Corey Joseph – along with Sabonis, Miles Turner, and Oladipo with that six guys. And then you have Aaron Holiday, who would be your seven guy. I think Aaron Holiday is going to be very good for them and potentially be a starter, if not next year, 2 years from now. And, you know, they still have T.J. Leaf. They picked up his option year. The other guy I think you got to really look out for, and we're going to find this out later, not now, is in the G League. He's on a two-way contract, Edmund Sumner. That's the guy. When I said that they need a guy who can boogie with the ball, get his own shot, be really aggressive, be a scorer, that's Edmund Sumner. And it's all projected on can he stay healthy because he came out of Xavier. They drafted him when he had torn his ACL at Xavier. He was under the radar. Nobody paid attention to him. In summer league, he was fantastic. In the preseason, he was fantastic. And there's been spots when he's played in the regular season where he's really looked good. 6'5", can handle the ball. Doesn't have a three-point shot yet. I think it's more of a confidence thing. But he's got that body type. He kind of reminds you of a guard version of Pascal Siakam that they have in Toronto. One of those guys that can get in passing lanes, switch on multiple guys, and do everything. And I think they're really waiting to see if he's going to be that guy before they make a decision on what to do in terms of acquiring a player of that ability, because they believe skill-wise they already have him, but they're wondering if health-wise, can he ever realize that potential?
Buried treasure. Every team's got a couple two-way guys that they consider buried treasure, and there's one for the Pacers. And going back to Bojan Bogdanović, only five guys in the NBA are shooting better from three-point range. He's at 45%. Two of those guys are named Curry. Seth is leading the league for Portland, and Steph, of course, is he's already got 184 of them just by playing in only 34 games. But the top five are Seth Curry, Davis Bertans from San Antonio, Joe Harris from Brooklyn, Steph Curry, Derrick Rose, and then Bogdanović and Gallinari are equal. You know, Indiana, as I keep saying, is full of unknown commodities for people who don't have league pass and don't watch all the games. But tonight, the TNT game, 7 o'clock Eastern time, and everybody get a chance to see the Indiana Pacers. We're going to have to start to wrap the show. J. Michael, you can follow him on Twitter at This Is J. Michael. He's the beat writer for the Indianapolis Star, and David Benner and all the Chrissy Myers and the people who work in Pacers PR say he's one of the best they've ever had around, and that you're in good company because I've worked with Mark Monteith and he was one of the best guys around. But J. Michael, I want to just throw a couple other games at you that are on the board tonight. And give me your thoughts right now. Sacramento is at Charlotte. Charlotte's favored by 2.5. Who you like?
Sacramento's at Charlotte. I like Sacramento.
Yeah, they're overachieving. Charlotte's not all that bad, but you know, that's a dog game. The Phoenix Suns are visiting Toronto, and Toronto is 7.5-point favorite, but they're on the second end of the back-to-back.
If Kawhi is playing, I think they'll clear that 7-point spread pretty easily. I don't.
Yeah.
Phoenix is so bad defensively. You or I could score 20 points against them.
I could score 27, man. I got 3-point range, NBA. we got Chicago in Denver, and Denver is favored by a big number, 13.5.
That's not enough. It should be 23. The Bulls are terrible, to quote Charles Barkley. Absolutely terrible. 13 is that's a pretty huge spread, but on the road and in Chicago, very understandable. I would take Denver in that one.
Yeah, Jokic might have the better of Cristiano Feliciano and Robin Lopez if Robin Lopez isn't traded by game time. And then the last one on the board is Oklahoma City at home, giving 10 points to the Lakers, who do not have LeBron James tonight.
Boy, I tell you, I think Oklahoma City obviously going to win the game. I'm going to take the Lakers if you go with that spread. I don't, for whatever reason, every time I think Oklahoma City should beat a team easily, for me, at least the games I pay attention to, they don't. So I'm going to take the Lakers covering that spread, but Oklahoma City's still in the game.
All right. He is J. Michael from the Indianapolis Star. Again, you can follow him at This Is J. Michael on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Sheridan Hoops. And I want to put in one last plug that this show lives on GetMoreSports.com, but the guys paying the bills are BetDSI.com, or if you're listening overseas, like in Lithuania, where the Sabonis' family comes from, you go to BetDSI.eu, and you use bonus code BBALL1000, and they'll match your first $1,000. They'll give you an extra $1,000, and you go out and have some fun. And if you take J. Michael's advice, you take the Lakers on the points tonight. man, no guest laughs at my horrible humor more than you do. So I really appreciate that, J. Michael.
Yeah, no problem. I can relate. I have pretty horrible humor too, so we're two of a kind.
Yeah, well, I got to get you in a poker game. We'll see who's a better poker player. So,
let's do it, man. When I'm up there next time, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, well, or sometime maybe at All-Star, we'll get Mike Finger in the game and we'll all lose because Mike Finger from the San Antonio Express News, he plays in the World Series of Poker every summer. So, that guy's a card player. All right. Well, thank you again for joining us on the show, and we're all looking forward to the Pacers and the Sixers going at it on TNT tonight. And with that, I'm going to wrap it up. This is episode 43. Episode 44 will be coming at you before you know it. And with that, I close with the same three words I close every show. Over and out.